Hello and welcome to Science World. Scientists recently announced that the weather phenomenon known as El Niño is returning, and it could bring some extreme weather with it. In fact, they say the El Niño might become the big weather story of the year. Public health officials are praising newly developed drugs that can eradicate the deadly disease hepatitis C. Now, scientists are working on ways to make those drugs cheaper so that more people around the world can afford the treatments. And today on our one-on-one segment, we talk with two scientists who are developing ways to make a new high-tech concrete. Why is that important? Well, they hope that their new forms of concrete may someday help ensure that our roads, bridges, and buildings are more solidly built, last longer, and provide a number of other benefits. These stories and more are coming up for you on VOA's Science, Health, and Technology magazine, Science World. According to forecasters, the climate phenomenon known as El Niño looks to be on its way back, raising the odds of droughts in some places and floods in others. Steve Barragona has more.
Every few years, tropical waters off the Pacific coast of South America turn warmer than normal. Warm air rises off those waters and changes the path of the major wind currents that blow around the planet. That's what's known as El Niño, says chief forecaster Tony Barnston at Columbia University's International Research Institute for Climate and Society.
So it all starts with just warming in the tropical Pacific, and it ends up affecting the amount of rainfall over places far removed from the tropical Pacific.
He says the air currents that normally carry monsoons to South and Southeast Asia can get diverted. Rainy seasons in southern Africa can turn dry. Meanwhile, East Africa and South America can get soaked. The latest official forecasts give about two-thirds odds that El Niño will develop by the end of the year. But what has really attracted attention is the huge body of warm water building up below the surface of the tropical Pacific. Mike Halpert heads the Climate Prediction Center at the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration. He says the amount of heat stored up underwater broke a record last month.
The March value is the largest we've seen. March of 2014 even exceeds March of 1997.
The 1997-98 El Niño was the strongest on record. It led to catastrophic floods in Peru, forest fires in Indonesia and Malaysia, and record high global temperatures. If those warm waters in the eastern Pacific make their way to the surface and stay there, it could mean a major El Niño event, weather havoc worldwide, and possibly new high-temperature records. But Tony Barnston says, don't panic.
Just having a lot of warm water below the surface now is not enough to guarantee that we're going to have a strong El Niño.
That warm water could dissipate. It could come to the surface but not linger. Barnston says El Niño is notoriously difficult to predict at this time of year. Plus, the atmosphere has been in a cooler cycle for the past several years. Many say that does not favor a strong El Niño. And finally, there is this note of caution from Gary Eilerts. He manages the Famine Early Warning System Network for the U.S. Agency for International Development. Eilerts was in Africa for the 1997-98 El Niño.
We said this is going to be a big one. This could be the mother of all impacts on food insecurity and southern Africa.
When the rains failed to come in November and December, Eilerts expected the worst. But then,
late in December, the rains came, the skies opened up, they continued for the next 3 or 4 months, and we had almost a normal season. And that was in the face of the largest El Niño ever recorded.
Forecasters should have a better picture of what El Niño has in store by August. Steve Barragona, VOA News, Washington.
Doctors who treat hepatitis C are hailing the development of drugs that can effectively eradicate the infection, which is a leading cause of cirrhosis and liver cancer worldwide. Now, scientists are working to make those drugs cheaper so that it's accessible to people in developing countries. Jessica Berman reports.
An estimated 150 to 185 million people worldwide are infected with hepatitis C, and many don't know it. That's because the virus is largely silent until late symptoms appear, including grinding fatigue, joint pain, abdominal pain, and jaundice, a yellowing of the skin and eyes. But pivotal studies of new antiviral drugs conducted in developed countries show they knock out upwards of 90% of hepatitis C infections, promising to revolutionize treatment in low- and middle-income countries. Chana Jasekra is with the Division of Gastroenterology and Hepatology at Stanford University in California. Jasekra spoke via Skype from the International Liver Conference meeting in London, where the new treatment options for hepatitis C are getting a lot of attention.
This is really a landmark achievement in all of medicine, I would say, because it's one of the few times where we've been able to definitively eradicate a disease with a short course of oral therapy.
Experts say the oral medications may even be more effective in the developing world because people there harbor different, possibly more responsive types of the virus than in the West. But a three-month course of the second-generation antiviral drugs in the West costs between $85,000 and $90,000, according to Jasekra. However, with the issuance of guidelines by the World Health Organization for the diagnosis and treatment of hepatitis C with oral medications in low- and moderate-income countries, there are moves to bring down the cost. Jasekra says competition among the handful of pharmaceutical companies and negotiations between manufacturers and governments, as well as insurers, eventually will make treatment affordable. The companies that produce the pills, according to Jasekra, also are in the process of securing licenses for the manufacture of generic drugs for distribution in countries where they are most needed.
So if a company that is selling these drugs feels that it is ethical and moral, and in the spirit of corporate social responsibility, appropriate to ensure that these drugs are also available to people outside richer countries, then you know that prerogative is theirs.
Jasekra adds it'll be necessary for each country to prioritize who gets treated first in order to hold down costs and not overwhelm healthcare systems. Jasekra made his observations in an article in New England Journal of Medicine. Jessica Berman, VOA News, Washington.
We just heard about the return of the weather phenomenon known as El Niño. For today's Science World Quick Quiz, what is the full scientific name of this oddity that can impact global weather and climate? Is it A, El Niño Southern Oscillation, B, Equatorial Ocean Weather Phenomenon, or C, Elevated Ocean Climate Cycle? Good luck. We'll give you the correct answer in just a few minutes from now.
This is Science World on VOA. Be sure to visit our new website and blog at voanews.com/science.
An international research team has discovered the earliest known cardiovascular system in the fossil of a shrimp-like creature from more than 500 million years ago. Roseanne Skirbel has this report.
The Yunnan province in southwestern China is known for rich fossil deposits, but researchers had not expected a fossil so exquisitely preserved as this specimen of the 520 million-year-old shrimp-like species. Researcher Pei Yun Chong with the Yunnan Laboratory for Paleobiology unearthed the fossil, and University of Arizona neuroscientist and team member Nicholas Strassfeld says it gave them the first detailed image of the creature's circulatory system.
It's a beautiful carbon trace. It is bilaterally symmetrical. It shows the dorsal blood vessel and the lateral vascular components, the arteries, the lateral arteries, and then a very, very beautiful system of arteries over where the brain sits in the head.
In earlier research with fossils of the same species, the scientists on this project had identified its brain, gut, and nervous system. Strassfeld says it's common to see fossils with imprints of teeth, shell, and bone, but not soft tissues because they decay first when a creature dies. He explains how the internal organs like those the team describes in the journal Nature Communications may have fossilized.
We assume that the specimens became entombed by a very sudden event, a sudden burial, maybe an underwater landslide, maybe something to do with a tsunami, who knows, maybe a very, very heavy dust fallout from a storm. And then this chemical preservation of the internal tissue as it was squashed flat.
This ancient marine species dates from the Cambrian period, a time in Earth's history when major animal groups began to appear with a huge variety of shapes and forms. Strassfeld says the organ systems detailed in this study are easily recognizable in today's crustaceans.
It suggests that already 525 million years ago, the basic layout, the ground, what we call the ground pattern of, say, a vascular system, had already evolved. And the ground pattern persists until this day in modified forms.
If we see this ancient shrimp as modern, then Strassfeld asks, who was the ancestor that gave rise to its sophisticated and very elaborate set of organs?
This is not going to be easy because we don't really have access to any older deposits. So what we hope to find in these Chengchang deposits in China are fossils of organisms that clearly were already ancient by that time. And that might give us a lead into how these more elaborate systems, these very recognizable elaborate systems, how these systems may be originated.
You can check out the internal organs of this half-billion-year-old invertebrate for yourself at voanews.com. Roseanne Skirbel, VOA News, Washington.
Imagine an airplane that can fly around the world powered only by solar energy. Science World's Bob Doty has more.
This past Wednesday, pilot Andre Borschberg unveiled his unique new aircraft called the Solar Impulse 2.
That's the first airplane ever built, which can fly a week, a month. Of course, it needs the proper weather. It needs sun every morning to recharge the battery, so you have to steer it in the proper weather conditions. But that's exactly what is aimed for.
The Solar Impulse 2 will begin test flights next month in preparation for a planned around-the-world trip next year. The plane has the same wingspan as a jumbo passenger jet, but only weighs about the same as a large car. That is because instead of heavy fuel tanks, Solar Impulse 2 is powered by more than 17,000 solar cells, grabbing energy from the sun and storing it in batteries. Andre Borschberg says he expects to take 5 days and five nights to travel around the world. But he says Solar Impulse 2 could stay in the air indefinitely. The plane is an updated model of a solar-powered aircraft built 5 years ago and flown across the United States last year. For Science World, I'm Bob Doty.
When you watch a movie these days, it's difficult to tell what's real and what is created on a computer. Elizabeth Lee reports from Los Angeles on how far this area of movie making has come and what the next frontier in creating movie magic will be.
Almost anything that can be imagined by a director can now become reality in the world of movies.
We're really not limited by the technology to build pretty much anything we want.
David Smith of Sony Pictures Imageworks says, with today's computer processing power and speed, the digital world is more realistic than ever before. For The Amazing Spider-Man 2, Smith's team created a Times Square that was indistinguishable from the real one in New York.
If there's lights inside the stores that are lighting areas inside the store, we put those lights in there. All the street lights on the street, we put versions of that into the computer world so that it mimics the real world exactly.
But there is still one challenge for visual effects artists, says Paul Debevic of the University of Southern California Institute for Creative Technologies.
We're still trying to figure out how to perfect the human face in movies.
You never know what's coming for you.
He says the 2008 movie, The Curious Case of Benjamin Button, is still the best example of a computer-generated face as actor Brad Pitt aged backwards from a wrinkled old man to a baby. Debevic says in addition to changing the look of an actor's face, there could be another use for digital faces in the world of entertainment.
There's also a big interest in trying to bring back actors who are no longer with us, and that's a big deal right now.
Last year, effects artists created a digital double of deceased Asian pop singer Teresa Tang in concert with Chinese pop star Jay Chou. Fans can still see and hear the concert on YouTube.
With a ton of data from us and then a ton of artistic effort and technical know-how from Digital Domain, they were able to create a singing face of Teresa Tang where she performed not only one of her original songs, but two songs that weren't even written at the time she was alive with Jay Chou.
Debevic expects directors will start to use more virtual production techniques like those seen in the movie Avatar.
Even though it looks like that's a bunch of expensive technology, ultimately it's going to be much easier to make movies that way.
Debevic says with virtual production, there won't be a need for as many people behind the scenes. Sony Pictures Imageworks' David Smith says computer-generated locations can also be more realistic to actors.
That's where potentially in the future, you know, if we can help create the world in the computer and bring it to the set so they're not acting in front of a green screen, but they're acting, you know, in front of a set that we've sort of mocked up in the computer that eventually will look more grandiose, they'll have something to grasp there.
But visual effects artists agree, even with improved technology and the potential to create anything in the virtual world, there is no replacement for a real actor interpreting a character in a movie. Elizabeth Lee for VOA News, Los Angeles.
You under surveillance.
Do you think you have the right answer to this week's quick quiz? Well, let's find out. A few minutes ago, we asked if you knew from the following what the full scientific name of the weather phenomenon known as El Niño. Is it the A, El Niño Southern Oscillation, B, Equatorial Ocean Weather Phenomenon, or C, Elevated Ocean Climate Cycle? The answer is A. The El Niño Southern Oscillation is actually a combination of two separate functions that make up this weather phenomenon. El Niño, or its colder sister, La Niña, alludes to variations in ocean temperature along the tropical west coast of South America. And the Southern Oscillation refers to the atmospheric component of this anomaly, which together can seriously impact weather and climate around the world. Thanks for playing along with us on this week's Science World Quick Quiz. We'll have another brain teaser for you again next week.
You're listening to Science World, VOA Science, Health, and Technology News Magazine.
The use of concrete as a popular building material can be traced as far back as the ancient Egyptians who used a lime and gypsum mortar mix in the construction of their famous pyramids. As demands increase for better quality concrete, scientists have been developing new high-tech formulations that use a variety of new materials. These new forms of concrete will be able to provide a much more durable, water-resistant, and malleable material that could allow for the construction of more solidly built, longer-lasting, and virtually maintenance-free roadways or bridges. University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee professor Konstantin Sobolev and graduate student Scott Musinski are among the scientists who are making this new high-tech building material a reality. Professor Sobolev and Mr. Musinski join us today on our one-on-one segment to talk about this new high-performance concrete and the many benefits it could someday offer. What are SECCs and how does it compare to traditional concrete?
It is actually different from conventional concrete because it is actually doesn't have coarse aggregates, rock particles with size of more than 5 millimeters. And so what we have there as additional component, we have superhydrophobic component, which is water repelling nature of the material. And also we combine it with engineered cementitious composite, so which is fiber-reinforced material. Obviously, it is material with very fine design engineered to perform in at very extreme conditions.
Does this play a role as far as safety is concerned, as far as driving surface?
Basically, it is also engineered for better driving conditions. But this part of the research is still on the way. We do believe it can be engineered to provide a better grip with the tires, but this part is under investigation yet. But material by itself can be used for very specific areas of the highways, like on their turning points, on any intersections, or any bridges. So this might be very, very beneficial application there.
A next question we're going to direct to Scott. For your PhD thesis, you worked with the SEC material as potentially new paving material. Tell us about your experiments in developing your thesis.
Well, we've done quite a few different tests on the material. We've done mechanical tests. We're looking at the compressive strength of the material, the flexural behavior of the material. And then we've also done some durability tests on it as well. We've tested its permeability, its chloride permeability, and things like that. And they've all showed terrific results and far superior to what we'd see with conventional concrete being used today.
What does this new concrete offer that traditional concrete can't offer?
Its intended lifetime would be significantly longer, and also maintenance required throughout its lifetime would be significantly less as well. So that would be a ton of savings for labor and things like that as well.
And Scott, I understand that you and your team added a feature so that the new concrete can monitor its own performance?
Yes, we included carbon nanofibers within the material. The addition of these carbon nanofibers makes the material electrically conductive. So we placed several electrodes throughout the material, and we can measure the resistance across it throughout the material. And hopefully we'll be able to monitor the changes in the resistivity if, say, a truck were to drive over, or if a crack were to occur, or if excess chlorides or excess water would be present in the material as well.
I understand that there's been a lot of research being done on what are called smart roads. Do you see your concrete playing a role in the development of these new roads?
Yeah, I definitely do. A lot of the smart roads that are being used now are quite expensive. It's really limited in what it can do. And our material is the sensing part is the concrete itself, and we have electrodes in it that will basically shoot any information we want from it basically right to our cell phone or to our laptop or wherever we are anywhere in the world, we'll be able to get that data.
Doctor, what about using these new concrete materials to use in construction of houses and other buildings? What could these new materials offer to those who are looking for something more durable than concrete?
The product we have, the superhydrophobic engineered cementitious composite, is just one application of what we have. Superhydrophobicity can be applied to virtually any existing concrete, which is already in the structure, so you can protect existing structures and extend the service life. And also it can be incorporated in new concrete, like a regular grade concrete, which is used like in 90% of our roads or 90% of our bridges, driveways, and etc. So this application can be easily extended to regular applications. And this is what we are really working now. We are trying to extend it to very simple concrete applications. So it can go everywhere, virtually, improving the durability, of course. This is the primary target here.
That was Professor Konstantin Sobolev and graduate student Scott Muzinski from the University of Wisconsin, Milwaukee. That's it for this edition of Science World. Thanks so much for listening. Before we go, we'd like to invite you to visit our new website and blog. The address is voanews.com/science. Along with program information, you'll find stories, links, and much more, so stop by and visit us on the internet. The address again is voanews.com/science. Science World has been produced by Bob Doty, and I'm Rick Pantaleo. Be sure to join us either online or on your radio next Saturday and Sunday as we check out the latest in science, health, and technology on Science World.